Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Election Day is just under 2 months away, and there is a variety of policy issues top of mind for voters. On today's episode, my guests reference the latest Election Watch publication and discuss the two most consequential policy questions for this election cycle. Joining me here today, glad to welcome back Kurt Ryman, head of Fixed Income Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS FSI, as well as Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. Kurt, Shane, it's great to be back with you both. As we are speaking here on Tuesday, September 8th, we are getting closer and closer to Election Day, and there is much to talk about, including the top-of-mind policy questions that we will be covering on today's episode. So let's get right into it. Kurt, the opening letter of the latest Election Watch publication is titled Something Old, Something New, which does evoke a familiar wedding tradition and also describes two of the most consequential policy questions for this election cycle. Kurt, can you provide our listeners with some context behind that title meaning and these two questions? What policy items are indeed top of mind for voters as we quickly head toward Election Day?
Yeah, we probably could have used the whole thing, something old, something new, something borrowed, maybe even something blue. But we stuck with the first two just to keep it simple. It captures the two very different policy challenges that are at the heart of this election watch and likely also the policy debate from not just the midterms, but through even the next presidential election. And those two are Social Security and artificial intelligence. So something old. It's obviously Social Security. It celebrated its 90th anniversary last year, and it remains the country's largest entitlement program. It's more than $1.5 trillion in annual outlays, which is over one-fifth of federal spending. It's central to household finances. Nearly two-thirds of retirees rely on it as a major – they call it a major source of income. But the program's trust fund is projected to be depleted in 2032, which is the, you know, that's the timeline for the senators that will take office in the next Congress in January. So without legislative action, the incoming revenue would cover only about 78% of scheduled benefits. And that means a 22% reduction in benefits. That's if nothing's done. So policymakers are facing an increasingly urgent, politically difficult choice of either raising taxes, reducing benefits, borrowing more, or some combination of those three. The something new is AI. And that's about, you know, AI investment right now. I mean, it's already adding about a half a percentage point to U.S. economic activity. But while that may be good, public concern is rising around job displacement, cybersecurity risks, data use, the electricity demand, and the impact that might have on household electricity prices, and more broadly, the local impact of data centers. We've done some work on this separately, but that work informed this section, but it's much broader. It's not just about data centers. The challenge, though, it's how do you address the risks around AI without undermining America's leadership position in this really strategically important technology? So these issues are top of mind, and it's not because they're identical, but because both expose the same political tension. Voters broadly agree that there's a problem, but the parties disagree over who should bear the costs and how government should respond. And with narrow majorities and likely divided government, progress on either issue is going to require a bit of a political marriage.
We'll see if that comes to fruition.
Yeah. Bipartisan concerns are going to have to be matched with bipartisan compromise. So we'll see where we get.
Well, Kurt, from hearing that, these policy issues, very complex and seem to require bipartisan cooperation in order to address, let's dive into these policy questions one by one, perhaps beginning with Social Security. Shane, Social Security approaching insolvency does illustrate the difficulty of turning broad support into agreement on how to pay for the program. Kurt did point out a moment ago how Social Security will be insolvent comes 2032. So when you think about Social Security reform, Shane, what do Republican and Democrat approaches to a solution look like?
That's right. Social Security is starting to really come into focus. And what I mean by that is, you know, I've been in Washington now for 25 years, and it was something over the horizon, you know, during that time. It was something that lawmakers knew would have to be dealt with eventually, but it was always far enough away that it, you know, wasn't prime time yet for them to start a real serious conversation about it. And now we have the annual trustees report where that says that Social Security will become insolvent at the end of 2032. So you're now seeing it come into focus. Think of it from just this simple way, which is senators that are elected this November will likely be here for that moment when Social Security is reformed, or, you know, something happens to it to sustain it for the next generation, right? So it is becoming a higher profile issue and with more serious conversations. I think what you're starting to see, obviously, is some of the old politics of, you know, the Republicans going one way and Democrats go another way. But you're also seeing some kind of earnest conversations about, well, how should we do this? You know, it's probably going to be bipartisan at the end of the day, because no one's probably going to have that super majority in the Senate. And so you're seeing even simple conversations like in the early 80s when Social Security was reformed, it was done by a commission, and then Congress voted on that commission's suggestions. And that commission was chaired by Alan Greenspan, so it's known as the Greenspan Commission. So you're seeing some members stand up now and say, hey, we're 6 years away. It's now time to actually have a commission in place and start thinking about different ways we can attack this problem. There are others, lawmakers, that say, hey, we were elected to do this ourselves. Let's start having the conversation. And you're starting to see some softening of positions. You know, there was one Republican senator from Ohio, Bernie Moreno, who has come out against increasing the minimum age to collect Social Security. You know, Republicans have generally been open to that. He has come out as a hard no. He's also spoken in support of raising taxes on upper income earners who don't who are cut off at a certain point from paying the payroll taxes that fund Social Security. So he is kind of leading the way of starting to soften, so, you know, others can hopefully join in and have more serious conversations about how to save Social Security. But I think what you're seeing in general is, you know, there are only a few different options, right? Increased revenue into the program, so higher taxes, some change in benefit structure, which may, you know, mean changes and reduced benefits or even higher benefits. I think that we generally believe that the way this would play out is that any changes in benefits would not be for those who are already receiving Social Security. It would probably be for future generations. And that way it would be a little bit smoother transition. But it's 6 years away, so we'll see how this all plays out. But, you know, it is remarkable now to see more serious conversations on Social Security start to happen.
Can I add just a point on this, which is really essential to the whole current environment with the fixed income market, bond yields rising, and part of it over concerns of U.S. fiscal sustainability? And there seems to be this idea that Congress is not going to act unless the bond market sends a signal and tells it to do something. And so that leaves everyone with this feeling of there's paralysis. And Shane's point, which I think is really critical, is there's a deadline, and members of Congress, legislators, are already talking about ways to fix Social Security. And by the way, Social Security is one of those programs, a pretty big one, that's adding to the deficit. So if they can sort out the fiscal concerns around Social Security, they're making a big step towards achieving something better on the fiscal sustainability front. So I don't think we should all just assume that as bond market participants that we should throw up our hands and say nothing's going to get done until the 30-year is, you know, over 7%. So, yeah, this is, I think, a really critical piece that Shane lays out here.
Clearly, Kurt, from hearing that widespread concerns on a matter that transcends partisanship seems to require a bipartisan solution, and that holds true as well for concerns mounting over artificial intelligence and data center development. Kurt, what factors are driving these concerns? A few moments ago, you had mentioned job displacement, cybersecurity among those on the list. So how would a Republican and Democrat response to these concerns at the federal level differ?
The concerns are clearly bipartisan. Yet there will probably be a red versus blue debate, but a clean Republican versus Democratic policy divide hasn't really emerged yet. Just like Social Security, it may take a presidential campaign to force the parties to define their competing approaches, especially under divided government and narrow congressional majorities. The broader point is that setting policy is about trade-offs. Policymakers have to weigh economic growth against safety, U.S. leadership against international cooperation, speed of the economy against oversight, and national benefits against costs that are borne by workers and communities. And this is not the first time Americans have feared a transformational technology, as you and I have discussed all during our conversation about 250 years of U.S. innovation. The early critics of the railroad were worried that if you traveled by train at 20 to 50 miles an hour, you could liquefy your insides. that fear was clearly exaggerated, but other concerns surrounding aviation, electrification, the assembly line, proved more grounded because those technologies expanded the reach of war, surveillance, and coercion. So a more useful precedent actually here is if you think back to the recombinant DNA story, you'll remember that we talked about how in the 1970s, scientists paused long enough to establish safety protocols. So AI may be different because some of the strongest warnings are coming from the industry's own leaders, and public concern is rapidly rising. Just look at some of the surveys. 55% of young adults said they were more concerned than excited about AI in June of this year. That's up from 29% in 2022. And the issue is local around data centers. 41% of Americans opposed to a data center within 3 miles of their home in July, and that's up from just 28% 6 months before. That's a pretty quick deterioration in support. So people are worried. They're worried about job displacement, data misuse, cyber attacks, advanced models that are bypassing safeguards. Data centers are the representation, the tangible representation of the costs of AI, whether it's maybe it's concerns about land use or water use, construction, upward pressure on electricity bills, the incentives that local governments are providing to these large companies that are siting there. But there's another side to the trade-off. AI investment is adding half a point, we estimate, to U.S. economic growth over the past year because of this build-out. And there is the potential for productivity gains, advances in medicine, and other scientific research. So it's not all downside. There are potential upsides. The policy challenge is not simply whether to regulate AI. It's how to manage the risks without undermining what is now a strategically important source of innovation and U.S. competitiveness. The way I think about this challenge is through three lenses. It's international, federal, and then local, because all of these jurisdictions will matter. Think about it from the international point of view. The U.S. has to balance preserving its lead technologically over China against cooperating with China to limit catastrophic risk. You think about it, right? So if we, on the one hand, we could restrict access to advanced chips and frontier models to support our leadership, but then that might complicate the efforts that the two countries might want to make to have an interest in safeguards around cybersecurity or biotech or military capabilities or even just social stability. So that's the international context. Federally, the trade-off is between the conditions that we're creating for AI development, the power it needs, the capacity of compute, the chips, the permitting, the grid upgrades, and so on, and managing safety, employment concerns, the security risks that are involved. There's going to be a partisan debate, clearly, over the appropriate response, but the priorities and the positions might not crystallize until we have a presidential campaign in 2028 to bring these trade-offs into closer focus. And then divided government makes this comprehensive solution more difficult. AI cuts across national security, labor, energy, fraud, civil rights, and so the responsibility doesn't sit in one clean agency or congressional committee. And then the near-term result may end up being that here federally we have a patchwork of guidance at the executive branch, some state regulations, local rules on data centers, maybe narrow federal legislation. So we'll have to see how this builds out, but there's a domestic groundswell of interest in regulation, and it comes from whether you trust AI or whether you don't trust AI. It's from both sides. And then locally, we've talked about this, you and I, together with our colleagues about data centers. You're seeing the state reaction, New York, Pennsylvania, recently Texas, and it might take a catalyst here to accelerate regulation at the federal level. We'll just have to see how quickly that comes about. We're already seeing it at the local level. Our conclusion was that the data centers will be built, just where and under what terms will have to change. So the takeaway, the conclusion from all of this is it's a powerful structural opportunity in AI, but as investors, we don't want to have narrow exposure to just a select group of beneficiaries. We want to think about the infrastructure layer. That's going to be important, but also those companies that are using it to advance productivity. And we have to be mindful that what's been a pretty, open wild west of development may face some regulatory headwinds in the coming years.
Well, definitely more to come, and the conversation will continue. And with that, do want to point you, our listeners, to the website ubs.com/electionwatch for investment insights on the U.S. midterm elections, including reports, podcasts, and videos. UBS Studios does produce the award-winning Road to the Midterm Election video series. Recent episodes can be found on ubs.com/electionwatch. Though, Kurt Shane, as we look ahead over the next couple of months, what kind of coverage can our listeners and clients look forward to, including the focus of the upcoming edition of the Election Watch publication series?
We will have a regular Road to the Midterm Elections video series that Anthony and the studios, of which you're a part, will be huge contributors to that. And they've organized a slate of speakers, both from UBS as well as our partners, to come in and offer their perspective on the midterm. And that's an award-winning series, so tune in and check it out. There's one more report in the series in mid-October. And I'll give – it's sort of like this one where we're sort of contrasting, right? So something old, something new. Mm-hmm. The next one will be a contrast in global versus local. I'll share the global perspective, and then Shane can offer – what we're going to touch on locally. But the global piece is really postcards from abroad. We have a network of CIO strategists, economists, and thinkers who are very interested in what's happening in the U.S., and we're inviting them to share from their perspective how the U.S.'s development, what divided government, U.S. foreign policy changes around the margin will affect what's happening in their region and why they think it's important. And then there's the local piece. Over to you, Shane.
Yeah, no, thank you, Kurt. You know, there will be thousands of elections for state legislature seats, and 36 governor mansions are up for grabs this election. So, you know, while I could probably talk about Washington, D.C. all day, we can't only focus on Washington. We have to look at what's happening in the 50 states and start, you know, thinking about how those elections will impact some of these important policies that will have a real-world impact on different sectors of the economy, whether it be energy, AI, or other. You know, you have to keep your eye on the ball, and that includes watching these local and state races. And so I think that's really important to take a moment and look at that as well. And I think that will be one of the goals.
Well, Shane, Kurt, it was great catching up with you both, and do look forward to having follow-up conversations here on Top of the Morning, as well as with you, Shane, on the Washington Weekly podcast series in the weeks ahead as we get closer to Election Day. Again, today we've been joined by Kurt Ryman, head of Fixed Income Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office, as well as Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor from Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. Again, I do want to promote the website ubs.com/electionwatch for investment insights on the U.S. midterm elections. Again, this includes reports, podcasts, and videos, including the report we've been referencing on today's episode. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/cio-disclaimer.